Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Coach Chat Radio. I'm Laurie Lawson, and my fantastic co-host, who is currently under 3 feet of snow upstate, is the wonderful...
Thanks, Laurie. Bernie here in the Catskill Mountains, looking forward to skiing tomorrow.
Right now, I think he's shoveling out. I'm in New York City, and we're not worrying about that right now. Let me tell you a little bit about Coach Chat. Here at Coach Chat, we believe if you change your perspective, you can change your life. We developed this show for coaches and for those interested in one of the fastest growing professions in the world today. We hook you up with some of the world's leading coaches who they share their expertise. And they give you tips and takeaways for expanding and improving your life and your business. And today, Bernie and I are so excited. We have our longtime friend, who we haven't talked to in a long time, but he is still a longtime friend, Michael Waitz. Michael, you there?
Hey, hey, hey.
Let me tell you a little bit about Michael. He is calling in from Israel, and we greatly appreciate that because he's probably going to get sleepy soon. But Michael's the co-founder of Virtuoso, which is a boutique training, curating, and consulting company that specializes in bringing out each individual's unique presence and enhancing their impact as communicators and leaders. He's passionate about teaching and has lectured at top academic institutions in Switzerland and Moscow, as well as Harvard's Kennedy School of Government and the Global MBA. He enjoys building communities, and you can tell that because he's the founder of EO Israel, a founding producer of the New York Musical Theater Festival, and a former chair of the Global Marketing Committee for the International Coach Federation. We are so excited to have him, and we wish we have more time to catch up, but we're going to catch up on air. So, Michael, what you been doing? We haven't seen you, I think we decided, since 13 years ago. What you been doing?
I know. It's amazing how much time flies. Well, first of all, as you know, I moved to Tel Aviv, so I wish we had 3 feet of snow, Bernie. I think yesterday or last week it got up to about 75 degrees here in the middle of December. But it's so good to be back in touch with you guys because I remember back in New York when I was coming up as a coach, you and the rest of the ICF board at that time and the chapter were such mentors and colleagues and friends and raconteurs in those years. I don't actually know how you two got into coaching. I find most people kind of fall into it. It's not something that somebody graduates high school, maybe these days they do, or you do for the dear listeners, saying, you know, I want to go out and when I grow up, I want to be a coach. Where did the idea come up for you guys?
Well, I'll go Laurie, first because I think I graduated. Yeah, I graduated in 2004. Talk about a dinosaur. And I thought, oh, this, I had discovered this. And then I found out there were people in the 80s doing it. But I was very impressed. I had done the career thing, and I had my own business. And I had, you know, gotten to the top of the ladder and went, something's missing here. And I found this show on television called Starting Over, and it was six ladies in a house with two life coaches. And I went, oh, my God, I'd kill to get in that house. And then suddenly IPEC, my alma mater for coaching, came to town with a promo. And I went back to hear, you know, what's this life coaching thing about? And I kept rejecting it. I didn't like the guy who promoted it. I won a free session with him. I still didn't like it. But I said, you know what? I'm going to listen to the universe, and I'm going to jump on in. And I have never regretted a moment since. So that's my story, a little television show and a little boredom. And here I am.
TV, the gateway to everything, or at least it used to be.
Yes.
Boy, well, you have me thinking back. I spent 35 years on Wall Street in leadership positions, and after 9/11, orchestrated the sale of the company and had nothing to do. So I decided to become sort of an advisor or consultant. I had some fun doing it, and I ended up running into somebody who recommended I meet this woman who sells furniture, which I thought was kind of weird. Why would I have anything to, you know, in common with her? But I decided to go ahead and meet this person, and I said, so you sell furniture? She goes, oh, I don't give a damn about furniture. I'm becoming a coach. And I said, what's that? And she told me what it was, and I said, oh, that sounds like, she didn't actually say that. It was a couple four-letter words about selling furniture, but I don't want to say that on the air. And I said, okay, how do you become a coach? And she went to IPEX, she told me, and I realized after an hour that she seemed pretty crazy, but the idea sounded pretty good. I said, you know, I could add some tools to my advisory toolkit. I thought, let me check this out, and ended up checking out IPEC, and the first day I went there, I was going to walk out because I thought it was so ridiculous, but decided to stick it out, and I actually graduated, and again, used that as a sort of a tools for my advisory business, and someone said, why don't you, you know, go to an ICF meeting, and I went to my first meeting and hated every minute of it, but that's okay. But eventually, a year later, we were asked to become board members of the New York chapter because the other chapter had resigned in drama, and that's where I met Lori, and the rest is history. We had a lot of fun building the chapter. Mike, you were part of it, and I believe you were on the board also.
Yeah,
I was. You know, Bernie, there's nothing like your sunny disposition, which I love. You know, I went to my first meeting. It was horrible. So
he
I
did.
Joined the board, and we had a lot of fun. You know, I find origin stories so interesting because I find no two are the same. Like, for example, for me, my background was in theater. It is in theater. And back then, this is probably late 99, early 2000, I had just moved to the city after being on tour with the Traveling Theater Group. And I was taking this improv class at Michael Howard Studios, and the teacher was a guy named David Matthew Pryor. I said, David, when you're not teaching improv, what do you do? He says, oh, I'm a life coach. I'm like, life coach? I don't know what that is. I know what a basketball coach does. You know, they make people, you know, take shots, and when they miss a shot, they make them run laps. Do you, like, help people in their life, you know, eat more vegetables, and if not, they have to run laps? He says, no, that's not what a life coach does. But you know what? You may like it. Here are a couple of organizations to check out. And I think back then it was, like, Coach U, CTI, and maybe somebody else, maybe Hudson. And I remember being on a call, and back then I was 23, 24, and so I was, like, the youngest guy on this call. But I loved it. I loved hearing everybody. I loved the questions. I loved the atmosphere. But at the time, I was dead set on becoming a successful theater director. It's like, yeah, someday maybe. And then that Thanksgiving, I was with my family, and my crazy cousin Charles comes in, and he says, I have seen the future. I said, Charles, what tell us, what is the future? He says, I got this coach, see? He's amazing. In the future, everybody's going to have a coach. And I said, okay, if crazy Charles hired a coach, I should probably go look into this. And so then I started training with CTI, and that's what got me started. And I loved it. I loved the training. I loved the people. I loved the questions. You know, my whole life I felt that I had all of these talents related to people, but I didn't know where to put them. And coaching was just this great place that I could put all these things that I loved and I was fascinated by in one place. I wasn't really good at holding down jobs because basically mostly what I do is just like talking to people and finding out about them. And this was basically getting paid to have fascinating conversations with interesting people. And I said, great.
Yeah.
Sign me up.
Mm-hmm. I love all of our stories. And I've always had a philosophy that coaching calls who it wants. And I think in each case, that's exactly what it did. And in Bernie, in my case, it's like we resisted. You just jumped in and went, all right, I'll do this. But I think one thing that bonded us all together was when we came to the ICF New York City Board we decided that we wanted to make it more user-friendly, and we really worked hard to do that, to get more people involved and to get them to feel like it was a community. And that took a lot of hard work, and that took a lot of consensus on all of the board's part to say, yeah, that's what we want to do. We want to make this something for the people, for coaches, so they can feel comfortable and grow and everything. So that's probably the glue that's holding us together as we speak today, just really wanting to get out there and do something to help people see the light. I think that's why Bernie and I do the show, too. We want to just let people know there's really cool folks out there doing cool stuff. And speaking of cool stuff, what on earth is a boutique training company? I it sounds so exotic. I want to do it. What you do in a boutique?
Me too. Doesn't it sound exotic? It's amazing what marketing company, what marketing company can do. So, and wait till you see our new marketing copy. It's even more boutique-y. After being in the coaching world for quite a while, I wanted to see how I could bring my theater background more to my client work. Because I felt that I was living between two worlds. One was on the coaching side of the family, working with individuals on career and life and business kinds of things. But on the other side, I was still in theater, doing theater directing, bringing out the best out of playwrights and actors. And I wanted to see if I could really bring these together into one. And so I wound up falling in with a company called the TAI Group, who after lunch with one of the partners said, why don't you come apprentice with us? And this was another aha moment, just like that call I had with Coach Yu. This was another wow. This is something that makes sense to me. This is how I can put even more pieces of me into this puzzle. And so I worked with them for a number of years, and they mentored me and taught me a ton of stuff, and I'm incredibly grateful for the relationships that I formed there and the knowledge that I got there. And I moved to Israel, opened up a branch of it here with my partner, Abigail Tenenbaum, who was also training there. And, you know, here in Israel, I don't know if many people know much about Israeli culture, but there's two things to know. Number one, Israelis are not shy about sharing their opinions. A friend of mine once said, Israel is the country of unsolicited feedback. You know, you could be walking down the street, for example, my son, when I was pushing him in the baby carriage, this random person in the park, a guy walks up to me, jogs up, he says, hey, is this your baby? I said, yes, he's a boy, yes. Is he your only child? I said, yes, are you going to have another one? I said, no. He's like, that's a shame. You should really think about having a girl. Because girls, they take care of you over time, but boys, they forget about you. Like, thank you for that piece of unsolicited advice. I will happily now disregard that. But the other thing is that Israelis believe that Americans are the best public speakers and communicators, and that they are not. So someone said, you know, Michael, there's a huge need here, but you'll probably find very little demand. Very few people who are willing to pay your fees for the service, even though most people feel that they will need this. And now, almost 10 years later, we found that to be the opposite. They're not just here in Israel. We work all over the world. We're now a team of seven. We work, we used to fly places back when there were things called airplanes. Now we Zoom everywhere. But really, it's about, I think, the intersection of leadership, communication, and influence. And coaching skills have provided a huge advantage to me, both working with my clients and also working and mentoring with my team. Laurie, I don't know where else we should take this. I can keep talking forever about this, but it's something that I feel like that time in New York that we had really prepared me well for.
What, Michael, what do you think changed over the past years? You said over the last 10 years, it went from, yeah, we could use it, we want to pay for it, and now we're willing to pay for it. What happened?
I think a few things. I think back when we were together in New York in the ICF, the issue was that people, you know, would quit their job, and instead of putting consultant, they'd put coach, even though they had no training. Since then, I think with the rise of TED and the rise of social media and video, communication skills and being able to create an impact with your presence and with your words has come into the public eye as something that's almost a must-have. And also, as an executive, I mean, Bernie, you can probably speak more to this. It used to be at, you know, a quarterly earnings call, people would just show up to a very boring meeting and hear some very boring things, and then everybody would go home. Now, you as an executive, particularly if you're in a public company and one that's followed, you're expected to be a performer. you're expected to bring some Hollywood to what you do. It's not enough just to get it there and deliver your ideas and deliver your numbers, but you're also rated on your performance. So I think between TED and the rise of social media and these kinds of things, people feel this desire to want to do well globally. And here in Israel, that's been especially the case, because here in Israel, there's not much of a market for the Israeli companies that are growing. They have to go abroad. And they see that in order to do that successfully, they have to be able to communicate well. And they have to be able to sell and spread their ideas and recruit.
You know, that's just a good point, Michael, because I do recall I was a CFO of two public companies, and I was on those calls, and they were scripted, and they were boring, and you used to cross your finger that someone would ask a good question because you really weren't supposed to answer any good questions. So that was what it was like back then.
Yeah, and now, unfortunately, you have AI that's listening in on these calls, and they're listening for certain keywords, so it's even, on the one hand, more scripted. But on the other hand, for example, clients that I work with on quarterly earnings calls, a lot of them are going towards something that's much more conversational, not the CFO section per se, but the CEO section, because they see that particularly during COVID times, people, their employees, even the analysts, yes, they want to be there for numbers, but they also want to see the leadership. They want to see who is running this company, and do we feel that they're going to be able to handle the changes and the unexpected dilemmas. So they've actually been not going on script and not doing the pre-recording.
Right.
That's fascinating. I think coaches were ahead of the general population when it comes to emotional intelligence. Anyway, we were kind of getting onto that before it really became the trend. But what do you see as the biggest challenge in the cultural meshing? It's like, where are your challenges? Because you're right, people are doing everything globally, and I think even more so now because they're not jumping on a plane, they're jumping on the computer. So how are you handling all of that?
Well, I would say that I think, Laurie, about coaches being ahead as a community is not just about emotional intelligence, but I think also in technology. I remember in the early aughts going to webinars, coaching webinars. Like, you know, back then, no, it was this really weird kind of thing. Now during COVID, it's almost standard. So I think, you know, having to do things virtually early on as a coach helped prepare me very well for what our business is now, which is, you know, we can't see clients in person, so we see them all virtually. And we do virtual very well because I think of that background that coaching had. But I think, too, it what you're pointing to is I think something that coaches are unique as far as what they bring to their clients. As I was thinking about what to talk about today, I was really thinking, okay, what are the major trends that are going on in the world today? You know, you have COVID and pandemics, you have climate change, you have this balance of power between the U.S. and China, where China is becoming, you know, the rise of China, and you have the growth of AI coming into the workplace. And one of my clients that I was working with, whose company does a lot of AI internally, a lot of the change management they had to do was to show that AI was not coming to take people's jobs, but really how can AI help them do their jobs better? And it got me thinking about coaches, you know, when we think about coaching in a world of increasingly intelligent AI, could an AI replace a coach? Couldn't, you know, in 10 years, if you fed, you know, an algorithm enough, you know, thousands of hours of master coaching sessions, could they do what a master coach does? And I think there's definitely certain things they can do, but I think there's certain things that they cannot. And I think there's four of those. One is, I think really great coaches help people with making sense of the world. That today it's really, really difficult to do good sense making. And you can search, you know, the war on sense making online and see a lot of really smart people talking about this. But having an outside perspective that helps you sort through all the information and sort through your own intuitions, I think, is going to become increasingly more valuable, particularly someone that you can know and trust. And I think the second one is self-making, meaning that, as we saw with this pandemic, the world is not necessarily a stable place. What we thought were the rules really aren't the rules. And that gives us, on the one hand, you know, a lot to be concerned about, but also gives us a lot of freedom to be even more at choice about who we want to be, the life we kind of want to live, where we want to go. And I think that amount of choice and option is overwhelming to people, overwhelming. In fact, probably terrifying, and they may want to shut down in the face of that. I think a great coach can help people break that up into digestible chunks and help them really think through that. I think the next thing is then, go ahead, yeah.
Yeah, it's so important, like what you're saying, because we all read the same studies that young people today are there's more cases of depression, there's high rates of suicide, and people are confused. They don't know what the heck to do, and I mean, that's a general statement. It's obviously more complicated than that, but there is a lot of it out there. So a lot of young people are not sure what it is that is expected of them when they even show up to a job, and you got the older folks, which are probably younger than me at this point, who are used to the way things used to be and really hate change. Having a tough time dealing with some of these other folks that maybe want to try different things and maybe want to enjoy their life a little bit more and feel more fulfilled. So it's a clash. And so there really is a lot of stress out there. Would you agree with that?
Completely. We've been given this incredibly powerful, I don't know whether you want to call it a gift or I guess it's kind of like a car. You know, with a car, you have both, especially in New York City, you have both the coolest thing in the world because you have a car and everybody in New York has a car, at least at a certain age, is cool. But also it's this incredibly powerful, dangerous thing that if you don't know how to operate it well or you don't know how to take care of it, can ruin your life. So how do you navigate with all of that power? I think you're right.
Wow, that's a great analogy. Yeah. No, I just said that's a great analogy. It's like, yeah, how do you navigate that?
So I think a big role of coaches or advisors and trainers, people that, you know, really are able to work intimately with someone, is how do you open the space for them and how do you open their points of view to seeing the possibilities in a way that they can begin to navigate them and to also think through the different scenarios that may or may not happen in a way that's meaningful. Meaning like, you know, we as humans, we're unique because we can think in timescales. We can think of the now, we can think of the medium term and the long term, but we're really not good about thinking about how all those three things fit together. And if someone said, you know, basically what I do as a coach, everybody has the same challenge. How do I make all my meetings and still lose weight? That's the tactical level of it. That's absolutely true. I'm a corporate athlete. I need to pee, but my schedule is back to back to back to back to back. What is my strategy for that? How do I deal with that? You know, nobody thinks about that until you're in that situation. So yes, there is that level, but then there's also how do I grow as a leader and in my abilities and in my team, and then even further on, what is the legacy I want to leave? You know, how is the world changing, and what are the trends that are coming, and how do I prepare me and my family and my community for that? And I think having somebody who is there, who is your provocateur, who is there just sort of checking in saying, have you thought about this? Let's set up the time to think about this. Let's carve some time in your schedule. Hey, you didn't carve time in your schedule. You told me this is important to you. Let's do this. I think is an incredible gift, especially during this time.
Yeah.
What are the other two things that differentiate coaches from AI, or that AI can't do?
Well, I again, this is just something I thought of this morning over breakfast. So I think it's an interesting conversation for everybody to be having. I think another thing that coaches are great at is helping people with pathfinding, meaning what are the different options that are open to you as far as what you could be or what you could do, given, you know, the given how you make sense of the world, given about how you start to curate who you are and your values and these things. So where do you want to take that? You know, our capabilities, the capabilities of our bodies, the capabilities of our minds are incredible, but we don't have a user manual for it. And so being able to harness that and then figure out where I want to point that, again, is incredibly challenging. And I think coaches, both from sharing their experience with other clients and also helping people, putting people in a place where they can reflect, it's a huge asset. And I'm not sure that at least AI is what we're going to see in the next decade or so, we'll be able to do that, because it does, I think, take empathy and emotion and this ability to share mind space together. Mm-hmm. And then the last one is you know, something that we've talked about early on, is people and change. Some people love change. I love change. But I think most people don't. I think they resist change. I think they're terrified of change. They probably would prefer things not to change. But this, what we're seeing now is that's really not an option anymore. Things are going to change, whether you like it or not. And it's how do you navigate through that? How do you build your resilience? How do you prepare yourself for these changes, even changes that you don't know about? And coaches are, again, really well suited for accompanying somebody, or I don't know if doula-ing is a verb, but sort of navigating from, you know, where you are through whatever it is that you have to go through to get to the next shore, and then do that again and again and again.
There's a lot like of a fear of making decisions, and I oftentimes, I think, in every conversation I have with a client, eventually I'll make a comment, well, as long as no one's going to die, what's the worst that's going to happen? And that seems to relieve a lot of people. You know, they laugh a little bit, like, you know, more interesting, but it relieves them a little bit. But no, as long as no one's going to die, meaning, you know, if I'm flying a plane, I want to be really careful about change, right? But most people aren't flying planes. And they don't have that kind of exposure that what people are going to die with to make a decision that may not be the best one. And so it's really tough, though, to get people in the mindset of getting out of their story, understanding that change is going to happen, and being the leader to make decisions in order to get things to move forward.
Yep. And the decision-making thing is so important, because that's something that I struggled with a lot and still struggle with. There's a great book for people who are interested in leadership coaching called The CEO Next Door by Elena Botello and Ken Powell. And they work for a company called GH Smart, which is one of these companies that when you are aboard looking for a new CEO or a new executive, they're the ones that go out and do the screenings. They do these half-day assessments with executives, looking at their resumes, asking them questions, tracking their progress, these kinds of things. And I forget how many of these they've done, something like, you know, they've done thousands. And so they got all the transcripts from all the interviews and all the data, and they arranged a big data analysis to see if they could find any trends between the behaviors that these candidates have and their actual results. And what they found is actually there are four groups of behaviors that stand out that really drive results. These are not the things that keep people hired, but these are things that drive results. And they are decisiveness, adaptability, relentless reliability, and engaging for impact. And this decisiveness thing, Bernie, is one of the things that they talk about a lot in the book, that when you are in the office of a CEO who's, you know, very effective, the pace is fast and they're making decisions all the time. That they would rather make a bad decision than make no decision. And one of the things they mention is that most people who have issues with decisions, people like me, think that decisions are one-way doors. But actually, most decisions, just like you said, as long as nobody's going to die, death is a one-way door. But as long as nobody's going to die, it's a two-way door. Mm-hmm. And then when it comes to change and adaptability, they say that that leaders, effective leaders, can spend up to 50% of their time thinking about the future, scanning networks for information that initially on its face doesn't seem relevant, but eventually becomes relevant, scanning for signals, looking for where changes are, where things may go. So I think in general, whether you're an executive or not, these are great things to adapt.
We're out of time, and this has been like three old coaches, nothing to say about our ages, but three old coaches is getting together and chatting, and we miss this. We miss you, Michael Waite, for sure. Thank you so much for being on our show. Tell people how they can get in touch with you real quick if they need to.
Sure, you can reach me, michael@virtuoso.com, find me on LinkedIn, Michael Waite. Or look at us, www.virtuoso.com.
Fantastic. So nice getting together with you guys. Bernie, take care. Thank you for being a great host. Michael, I hope we'll see you in 2020. Or not see you, but hear you in 2020.
Yeah.
Take care, everybody.
Thanks, Laurie. Thanks, Bernie.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.